Okay, and welcome back. Hour number two tonight. We're going to do 2 hours with one of the most remarkable people we've ever had on the program in these 24 years coming up. His name is William, call me Bill, Tompkins, who has some strange connections with my life, and it's odd to sit back and think about how things, well, they say there are no coincidences. We'll just leave it at that. Hello, Bill. Welcome back. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing real good. How are you guys doing tonight?
It's crazy out there. It's like trying to hold on to the tail of a bucking bronco. It's wild. I wish we could just sit back and listen to you every night, but we'll get through it. Now, there's a lot going on in terms of your life that, you know, we could talk for years and we wouldn't even get to probably half of it, but we'll give it a shot here. In this WikiLeaks email dump, there have been a number of emails that were dumped that are relating to Dr. Ed Mitchell, the Apollo astronaut, and John Podesta, Hillary's campaign chairman. And they're interesting. Now, I knew Ed Mitchell a little bit, and these seem to me to be a little nebulous in what the exact import of them is. Have you gone through them all, Bill, and what are your thoughts about what you're seeing?
Well, I have gone through some of it, but frankly, I'd like to have you relate what you understand and let me come in with my version.
Well, the one
so
that
you could explain it to the audience.
The one that I remember most clearly, and I don't have time to go trying to find it. Let me just read one, then I'll tell you what the answer to your question is. This is from Ed Mitchell. Dear John. This is a kind of a classic salutation, isn't it? Dear John.
Yes.
Dear John. Now that you are no longer serving in the White House, I write to you and Aaron requesting our face-to-face meeting to discuss zero-point energy and disclosure. Our Quantrek Science Intuitive has provided us with a few facts about our nonviolent contiguous universe, ETI, who promote pacifism. So ETs don't like war, at least the ones he's talking about, and with whom we work. So he's suggesting that there is some ongoing connection, at least at some level, with one off-planet intelligent species. That I think anybody with an honest, open mind would have to embrace that as a certainly a potential, to put it mildly. Number one, writes Ed Mitchell, all true ETI he calls them, do not inhabit this universe. Number two, so-called ETs inhabit this universe and are in fact just celestials. They are higher in rank than discarnate spirits, even those who are evolved. They are higher in rank than discarnate spirits, or what we'd call ghosts, even those who are evolved. However, they just mirror violence on Earth, feeling threatened by contamination of their abode, their home. Number three, extra universal ETIs, on the other hand, have long ago evolved past violence, relying on spiritual intelligence to avert destruction. Number four, the Phoenix Lights and other sightings have provided ample evidence that Earth has been visited by beings whose intention is purely peace, and who have nonviolently hovered over Phoenix and other cities, waiting to be asked to help, when they could most easily have destroyed the city with their uses of consciousness. These sightings have been witnessed by thousands of people in Phoenix alone, including my colleague such and such and such and such. So what he's doing here, he's asking for a sit-down with John Podesta. The email I remember most clearly had to do with his request to talk to Podesta about war in space, about doing things and making plans to avert war in space. And if you read the email correctly, what he was talking about was not necessarily an ET versus human war. It was, as I read it, talking about the militarization of space by the United States, by China, by India, by Russia, and war in space between those nations. That's what I read the email to say. Now, I don't quite understand why Ed would approach it as he did, because space has been militarized since probably the 1960s. They've had weapons up there of all kinds, and that was 50-some years ago. What they have up there now is probably past anybody's idea of what humans might be able to do, because they're always 20, 30, 40 years ahead of us. They've got beam weapons, energy weapons, they've got kinetic weapons, they've got magnetic weapons. Those were some of the early ones that would actually be attracted to another metal satellite, and it would go near it and blow up. That was one of the first modalities of space war. But I think Ed Mitchell was talking about that kind of space war. And it seems to me that the barn door is open, Bill, and the horses have run. Space is militarized to beat the band by us already, is it not?
Yes, it is. No question. However, I have to disagree with a little bit of what you've just said.
That's fine. Go ahead.
The acceptance of essentially the White Hats, the good guys out there.
Yeah.
The acceptance that they, he's indicating that they are the primary, whereas what we know now, that there are and have been considerable wars on this planet thousands of years ago between different extraterrestrial civilization people.
Right.
And we know that we've had a problem in navigating space locally here because there's a whole bunch of rocks spinning around the sun. In fact, some of these rocks are real, really big. And we have to weave our way through those rocks to go out into space from here when we go certain directions.
Is that the alleged exploded planet, that whole ring of rocks?
Oh, my goodness. Could that be? Yes, sir. Yes, we're talking about that. And yes, we're talking about what caused it. It was not a war between people on Earth against people in space. It was different extraterrestrials arguing over a certain part of planet
Real
Earth.
Estate, sure.
Dirt. A lot of dirt.
Mm-hmm. I have no problem with that. I wouldn't discount that for a moment. Look, this planet's been here for 4.5 billion years. We're seeing now, I've ran across something... fascinating video about early life or advanced life on old Earth, young Earth, long ago, 1 million years ago, maybe 2 million years ago. We have arisen and fallen on our faces probably more times than we want to count. And that doesn't count off-planet intelligent visitation, involvement, wars, who knows, you know, about the radiation we've measured in India. There's just clear evidence that there was a nuclear war fought there once, a long time, maybe 50,000 years ago, who knows. But I don't discount anything you say, Bill, never have, and I agree. I think that Ed Mitchell, in talking about disclosure, though, is talking about his hopes that he will be able to work with John Podesta to put forward, again, the disclosure people that have already come forward. But I don't read in the emails any suggestion that Ed thinks that John Podesta is going to cough up any great, great or significant news, but maybe I missed it and I didn't read them all. But I think this is an issue that Ed is trying to reach out to somebody who he feels is on a power level that can help the disclosure effort. The idea of disclosure, of course, is fighting the ridiculous cover-up by the government and the powers that be, that there are no visitations, there are no visitors, we're the only thing in town, we're the only thing in the known universe that can deal with. So, yeah, go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt that much, but go ahead.
Well, I'm only saying that gee whiz, up until very recently, we thought that there were several thousand other galaxies out there.
Oh.
And then we found out, oh my gosh, there's 200 million. And then it went to 200 billion.
Yeah.
And now it's 200 trillion. But the numbers don't really make, they don't bother us. It's just that this insane acceptance that people on Earth are the only intelligence out there.
That makes us pretty damn dumb, doesn't it, Bill? I read a whole story when the Soviet Union fell apart and the generals began talking over there. I read one story about a daylight war between two groups of extraterrestrials who were fighting each other in broad daylight over some city in Russia, shooting at each other, shooting some of their ships down with beam weapons of some kind. There was a war. They were fighting. So, yes, your point about they blowing a planet up here, certainly they're hostile ETs. There are all kinds of ETs. Trillions of galaxies? Trillions? Yeah. Anyway.
Wow. Yeah, we need to get past this. We need the public to be aware of what has really taken place, not what we've been told, and not what's taught in the schools. I think this is where our problem is, and it's the primary reason that it's hard for the average person to accept something different than what he was taught in the university. And we've said this before, but it's important that we realize we have been given misinformation for thousands of years, and we need to get above this, get around it, understand who we are, and be realistic, and then get involved. We need more people involved. There's many people that have worked in the space programs who have been reluctant to talk. And I'm only saying, gosh, if there's any way we can get a few more of those to come out, it will help the whole situation on disclosure.
Right. Well, they're obviously, in many cases, threatened or live under a fear that is warranted. The government can make life very unpleasant for people who don't play ball. And also we know that knowledge and wisdom, advanced technological knowledge and ability, is being kept from us. We can look at artifacts that are only 200 or 300 years old, and we don't know how to make them, even now. That knowledge has been taken away from us by those who really run the show here.
Absolutely, yes. And, you know, a few years back when we talked about Betty and Barney Hill, people and their involvement in being abducted and all, what was really not brought out then in the articles on it was that the vehicle which had been, which they had been not abducted, but they actually went on board this UFO, was simply one of many different UFOs that were operating from a very large spacecraft carrier. That's what the Navy calls them.
Right.
Other people call them motherships, okay? And this particular one happened to be over 150 miles long. Oh, my gosh, what are you saying? An aircraft carrier isn't even a mile long, okay? And you got this thing parked out there in orbit, and not just a few vehicles coming out. The first that came out started to cruise around the planet. Others came out of those cruising around specific areas, and others came out of them to detailed areas.
Wow.
From this one vehicle, which is obviously not from here. It's from way out in the galaxy or somebody else's galaxy.
Sure.
We have to start to realize what we're dealing with here. And yes, there are exceptionally good guys, okay? They want to help us, and they are helping us, but even that's being covered up. And so I think we need to step back and address our situation in reality. And the more that can be brought out on your program worldwide, I think, Jeff, is really important. You have a group of people on this planet that are asking for more information. They are really interested in what your broadcasts are. I've talked to a lot of people.
Well, thank you.
I even had a fellow in France who drew a picture of me with one of my models and made it look like the Eiffel Tower and all that stuff.
Oh, but nice.
There's people all over the planet
that
are listening to your program, and it's extremely important. Excuse me, I didn't mean to get off.
No, that's fine. The idea of disclosure is something I've been trying to push for 24 years on this program. And now we have people like the late Ed Mitchell, who have certainly made his mark, and many others who have come forward, who have worked inside the technocracy, and they've come forward and told the truth. So, but it's so damned embarrassing to me that we even have to fight this kind of a war. We have a God-given birthright to get the truth. What are they going to gain, Bill, by hiding the fact that the skies are full of craft that we didn't build? We built some of them. Some of them you designed. But there are people here coming from lots of different places.
Actually, what they're gaining by keeping this quiet, our government, is control. And some of the extraterrestrials are controlling them. So we can't blame everybody in our government and other governments on the country.
Well, now let me ask you a question about that. And by the way, in case you folks don't remember, our galaxy, which is the one you see overhead, that real thick, beautiful string of stars, our galaxy, the Milky Way, just ours. There are now trillions of galaxies in the known universe. Trillions of Milky Ways. In ours alone, contains between 200 and 400 billion stars or suns like ours. 400 billion suns and at least 100 billion planets. Now, do you think that on one or two of those 100 billion planets there just might be an advanced intelligent species? Like right here at home, so to speak. Now, anyway, you want to comment on that, just by way of...
Well, yes, I really do, because what we need to do there is to go back what you were referring to, Jeff, in what our own planet has had. We've had civilizations on this planet that were built by extraterrestrials thousands and thousands and thousands of years ago.
Yeah.
When they realized through their advanced electronics that one of the continents was going to climb up on top of one of the other continents, and then we were going to have a big earthquake, and then we were going to have another flood like Noah's flood.
Uh-huh.
They simply left. Everybody knew it was coming. They had all the electronics, all the communication. They knew it was coming, so everybody left. And they went back to their stars, planets, and did some shopping back there for a while. And after everything settled down, they came back down again, and they rebuilt the structures that they had before. And so it isn't that we just started this thing a couple of thousand years ago. It's been going on this planet for thousands of years.
Maybe billions. Maybe it's 4.5 billion years old, Bill. Who knows?
Yeah, and so we even know that much now. And even as recently as some of the fellows up in north of in Malibu in this area were able to establish artifacts of extraterrestrial facilities on the top of the main mountain in Malibu. Not much, but it's still there, and this is tied in with other extraterrestrial facilities out on Catalina and of the other islands.
So these are remnants, ruins, earth mounds, or whatever, signs, indications of intelligent construction in the distant past.
Yes. Mm-hmm. No question.
I've seen at the bottom of the ocean, Google, they have imaged it. Don't know how they did it, but they did. And you can go down there and look around. And somebody put together a four-minute video, which I looked at last night. I'll send this to Frank. Hi, Frank. Thanks again for your help. And it shows the bottom of the ocean, Bill, in many different locations. And there are grid patterns, clear signs of intelligent construction back when the bottom of the ocean was not the bottom of the ocean. Maybe the polar caps were huge. Oh, no, I've got all kinds of imagery of that. I'll send it over to Frank, and he'll get it to you.
Okay, I don't want to deviate from your subject tonight, but you just hit another one, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I would like to talk, if we could, a few minutes about a program that Lockheed and General Dynamics had.
And who? Well, Lockheed and who?
General Dynamics.
Okay, got it. Yeah.
For many, many years, almost as far back as when the first airplanes were built, we made some airplanes, the early fellows, Curtis and the other companies, which were flying boats. And they flew off of bases in the different parts of the planet. Different countries used them. The Navy had them. And later on, back after World War One, they started submarine programs and looking for submarines. So more recently, the Lockheed company built their big two-engine P-3 anti-submarine aircraft.
The Orion.
And so your Navy, yeah, and your Navy has had squadrons of these aircraft operating since way before World War II. And the earlier planes were actually big flying boat type aircraft, like PBYs that Lockheed had, twin engine. But later on, more recently, they were using these large P-3s. And so these were developed to locate submarines. The United
right.
States was being investigating Russian primarily in more recent years, Russian submarines, which could be boomer ballistic missile type. And so they would track these. And then more recently, some of these sensors, which they have on board these aircraft, which were looking at the bottom of the ocean, trying to find submarines deep, they found that there were artifacts. The radar and the sonars and the sensing systems found facilities down there.
Yeah.
Even between Catalina and San Pedro.
Talking about underwater ET UFO bases.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. So what's interesting about this is that publicly you read about the Navy having another redesign, updated equipment for anti-submarine aircraft, the big P-3s. And they're training new personnel, different squadrons, and so it looks like, my gosh, we might have as many as 200 of those aircraft in out in the Atlantic and the Pacific Ocean.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you start looking at numbers that have gotten built, and you finally find out it's maybe 400, or maybe it might even be 700. Oh, my goodness. And then we find out that NATO uses the same airplanes. And so now we have 14 more countries all flying anti-submarine aircraft
mm-hmm.
for hunting submarines.
Looking, and yeah.
But maybe not just looking for submarines.
Maybe not.
And then in the late 70s, early 80s, I was lassoed to go to work for General Dynamics.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got a hold of a fellow that was handling the ASW programs in General Dynamics. And
that's anti-submarine warfare, ASW.
Yes, right. And he was getting started on a whole new program with different types of sensors
mm-hmm.
to be used on these large Lockheed aircraft.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm not going to go into the detail of the title of the system, but essentially this was looking for extraterrestrial vehicles and extraterrestrial facilities on the bottom of oceans and large lakes,
uh-huh.
Like Great Lakes in the United States. And so I helped put together a whole new program on this, and I did some of the design, basic, and they made me program manager. And so this is important to understand. They have a very large facility here in San Diego, General Dynamics, and they have them in Texas, and they've got them actually in probably 8 or 9 different cities in the United States. But the primary effort from the advanced design is coming from Crystal City in Washington, D.C. And Crystal City, as most of you may or may not know, is a underground city next to the Pentagon. And this is a complete city. It's called Crystal City. And it has five high-rise buildings which start on the bottom of the city, which is like 300 feet down from the surface. So these buildings then rise up, and there's five of them that come up above ground, and it's just all landscape next to the Pentagon, in that security area all around the Pentagon. So General Dynamics has one of the buildings there, the only one that a private company has, and the other four buildings all have admirals on top of them with different commands.
Mm-hmm.
So they set up a office for me in the Pentagon to start to put together the program planning for this new system.
What year and, period would that have been, Bill, approximately?
Like 1980.
Uh-huh.
And I'm doing all of my work here in the facility here, and then I'm flying back to Crystal City all the time.
You've been in Crystal City how many times? Quite a few?
Hundreds, because I've done many, many different programs besides what I'm talking about here.
Okay, now hold your thought. I need to do this for our listeners around the world. Tell us what it's like, describe, when you go back or go to Washington, D.C., how you gain entry to Crystal City, how you go down to it, what do you see when you get down there? What does it look like? People want to know this.
Okay, actually, you can see the buildings rising up out of the beautifully landscaped acreage. You can see it from the runway, you can see it on the takeoff, you can see it on the landing.
Uh-huh.
And after you land, they have company facilities drive you over to Crystal City. And so our hotel is there, underground.
How do you get down, Bill? Where do you go?
Well, you go to the parking lot, and then you go down to the underground parking, which is just in the upper levels, and to get to the city. So when you come out of that parking area, you're in what you would call a regular mall, except it's, 40 times the size of a mall, because you have all these buildings underneath the ground.
Huh.
And most of the contractors have their facilities there, but they're all underground. The four admirals have four of the buildings that go above, and General Dynamics has one that goes above, too. So my office in General Dynamics back there is above ground, second to the top floor. So we can see all over. We look at the beautiful landscape. Looks like a golf course, and some of it is a golf course. Anyway, you go down, you go to your room in the hotel, and there's all types of transportation all over the city, every type you can think of. And then it's connected to the underground passenger railway system.
And people live in Crystal City year-round. That's their home. A lot of them probably don't even come up to Topside very often. It sounds like it everything down there.
Yeah, it has everything there. It's a beautiful facility. So you go to your hotel, and it's just the same as a hotel above ground. Everything is just the same. And so the next day for your meetings, you go to the office. In this particular case, we just go across an area. It's about, I'd say, 5-6 blocks from the hotel, and we're going to the reception area at the bottom of this building, the General Dynamics has, and we take the elevator up to the area that I'm in. And so you do your business, but they had a problem. And I mentioned this before, but it's important that at this time we say it again. They had had a real problem on this program to get into the Nav Space group in the Pentagon, which were handling this new ASW program, looking for extraterrestrial. So they asked me if there's any way that I could coerce an entrance into the Admiral. And for whatever reason, and I'm saying this to everybody out there, you can ask me, well, I don't believe that, Bill, what you just said. Anyway, I made one telephone call. I talked to the Admiral's aide. I told him what the program was, and I told him it was extremely important that we needed a briefing. And so that briefing then was, well, essentially, the Admiral's secretary, I talked to her, I talked to the aide first and then her.
Mm-hmm.
She talked to the Admiral and she called back about 20 minutes later for a meeting the next morning. And so we had a 9 o'clock meeting with the Admiral the next morning. And I just have to say, don't get me to justify how I did that, okay?
No, no.
But I'm
you have your ways,
say,
Bill. I know.
Yes, okay, and this works. Nobody in the office, well, all the other VPs, all the VPs that were there couldn't believe it because they've been trying since the program has started to get into the number one guy. Anyway, I got them in, we had the meeting, and we did a really good penetration proposal. But the point is here that Crystal City is an enormous city underneath the ground that most people don't even know is there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's obviously set up for all of the contractors and the interface between the military and the commercial companies in aerospace and biomedical space.
Okay.
All you do is come down another elevator from the city, and in this case, right from the General Dynamics building.
Uh-huh.
We
in
go down
D.C.
an elevator.
Yeah.
We get on to the very fast-moving underground transit system, and in 4 minutes, we're over underneath the Pentagon, we open up there, and there's a long set of stairways going up. Actually, there are elevators, but most people go up the stairways, and then you're inside of the Pentagon building.
Right.
And the Navy has 30% of it, really. So you go into their facilities. They then take you to different areas. In our particular case, they took us to the ASW, because that's who we were dealing with. And incidentally, one of the four Navy buildings above ground, which starts way down on the bottom in the ground, is all ASW. They do have some aircraft, but it's primarily ASW. It's a very big facility dedicated to anti-submarine warfare.
Now, they don't always use aircraft to track. They've got satellites now, and they have probably other technologies that can listen and pick up and triangulate any kind of noise that's in the ocean that is not normal.
Yes, absolutely. And so we then designed a system of sensors, General Dynamics did, and that was actually an unsolicited proposal that I helped put together. So then there was two things. One was like a command center aboard the aircraft, and the other part was some nine different type of sensing systems that, yes, Jeff, they were tied into all kinds of Navy satellites and communication systems. Now, what took place was that I think what's interesting that people don't realize, and some of this is public, we're not just talking one-sided here completely, the numbers of squadrons and the number of personnel required for literally hundreds of P-3 anti-submarine aircraft, okay? It's staggering. The number of bases, the number of facilities, the number of training centers, the number of support facilities.
Now, this is 35 years ago.
Yes, sir. And so what was also not realized was that we didn't have, like, 40 airplanes. We had a number of hundreds of airplanes. And this then got to be, like, even published programs, 200 aircraft, whereas we had many, many more than that. And then we had all of the NATO nations, the same airplane, the same new systems, all out looking, no longer for submarines, looking for extraterrestrial facilities, operating centers, tie in to different extraterrestrial facilities, like dozens and dozens of different extraterrestrial facilities, some of them working with each other, some of them totally independent, some of them only here for short periods of time.
Different people.
Facilities. Different extraterrestrial civilization people. Wow. And this got to nearly 3,000 P3s. Now, on top of this...
3,000 P3s?
Wow.
That's an awful lot.
Minute. Yeah. Back off for a little bit. The Navy also has a aircraft, which is a big twin-engine carrier-based aircraft, which also has some of them ASW, and some of them have command communication for central regions that a Navy battle group would be developing in. So they have a great big round radar that's on top of this twin-engine Grumman aircraft. And so one of the other things that I got pulled into was to get a mini command center put into these quite narrow fuselage airplanes mm-hmm. because it's carrier based. It's got to be landed with a resin carrier
right.
and steam catapults.
Whatever your passion is?
We designed this system and then got essentially every aircraft carrier
uh-huh.
has at least three of these aircraft, and we miniaturized the Lockheed P-3 aircraft system, both the command center and mm-hmm. the sensors. And we loaded these in to squadrons after squadrons of these for every Navy battle group. So as most of you already know, we have like 12, 14 aircraft carriers, and we try to maintain that. And they all have these big twin-engine Grumman region command center aircraft, which have, it looks like a big flying saucer on top of the fuselage. And we micromanage our other systems with the Lockheed aircraft, put these in small stations, added to the command center station that the aircraft was already set up for, and so now we've got every battle group with the capability of looking for extraterrestrial facilities all over the planet, in addition to all of the P-3s that the Navy has and that the corresponding naval facilities from 14 other countries. So this is a massive organization with thousands and thousands of people being trained to support these and maintain these, and like aircraft carriers or like aircraft, you have 50% in the air all the time.
Right.
The other 50% is in modifications and updates and maintenance. So you have no idea the magnitude or the size of so-called ASW, which is looking for extraterrestrials.
No, that's fascinating. So publicly, it's anti-submarine warfare and detection. But privately, it's all about mapping, monitoring. I don't think we could regulate, but certainly watching ET visitors coming here to do whatever they're doing and doing it. And they may have been here before we were here. We don't know.
Well, there's no question. That's not a may. There's no question. They were way ahead of us. I didn't mean to get off on that, but it's important that you realize that a lot, incidentally, even the Russians and the Chinese have their aircraft, and they've converted theirs to looking for submarine, looking for extraterrestrial too. So it's not just the United States. It's amazing. A lot of money, a lot of effort going into trying to figure out what's going on. Wow.
Well, okay. No idea. That's an extraordinary program. And clearly they're looking and they're finding. I remember years ago hearing about our satellites. There were two of them, I guess one on each side of the planet pretty much, GeoSync, and they were sitting out there, and their whole job was to watch the comings and goings of E.T.
Yes. That's controlled by the Offutt Air Force Base in Omaha, Nebraska. I did the design for that in the secret think tank in Douglas in 1953. And I actually by my level of program on the anti-submarine extraterrestrial program, I was put on to a corporate red team. And I was selected to be one of three people that would essentially advise the Air Force for their next 10-year requirements.
Uh-huh.
So instead of having that meeting in the Pentagon with the Air Force, we had it 400 feet underneath the ground in a underground command center. And there's a drawing that actually is one of the drawings that I did for that system. It's in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see it. And it's 400 feet underneath the ground. It's 28-foot thick concrete dome in a great big hole cavern. And it has tunnels that go out to other underground
28 feet thick concrete.
Yes, sir. And you ride down this elevator, and it seems like you're never going to get down. But I got to go to the facility that I had designed
uh-huh.
in 53, and I went to it in 83.
Wow.
Wow. And I made the recommendations for the next 10 years for the Air Force.
Do they, Bill, do they have any real concern of anybody going public? There must be tens of thousands of people involved with these underground facilities, ultimately. And nobody ever talks. At least they don't get any. I'm not expecting them to show up on CNN or NBC. But nobody talks. Not on the internet, nothing. They're quiet. Are they threatened?
Okay. Where
they have to sign contracts? How does it work? That's security has always been interesting.
Okay, actually, they put these ridiculous security on the programs. And but unlike that, on some that I have done, like in the Navy, working for Admiral Riccobata, and the Navy spies, the extraterrestrial studies that in World War II essentially came back from Germany. That never had a single piece of paper stamped, even confidential. That program was so secret, they didn't even mark anything.
Huh.
Unbelievable.
Wow.
And, but that most of the other programs, much of it is ridiculous. You really didn't need it at all. I guess a good example. I have a model right in front of me. It's made out of plastic, and I say it like to describe it.
Uh-huh.
First of all, this is a model of Lockheed X-33 spacecraft, and it's the prototype, so it's a delta-shaped spacecraft.
Mm-hmm.
And it has two vertical stabilizers on the back and two sub-horizontal stabilizers in the back on either side. No wings. And it's quite thick, and it has eight windows. And two of those are in the forward part where you can look out. The pilots and co-pilots can look out. And here in San Diego, we have the Blue Angels come in every year, and they demonstrate to the Navy's aircraft.
Right, right.
And so the public gets to go to that. And in, I got this at the last, no, I got this 12 years ago at the Blue Angels flyover.
Mm-hmm.
Out on the Naval Air Station. It was Naval Air Station then, not at Marine Air Station.
Mm-hmm.
It was Navy Air Station. And so I bought this at the stand, and on the bottom of this model, now listen to this, it says X-33, that is a model, and it says Made in China. Now this is a perfect model of a top secret space vehicle that Lockheed designed.
Made in China. Right?
And the model is made out of metal,
yeah.
And it's a perfect model.
Well, that's...
They put two wheels on it and another wheel in the front, so it's a kid's toy. Wow.
How do you think the Chinese got that much detail on this particular craft? That is...
They're getting all of it.
I'm sure. They just hack in and take whatever they want.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, this is part, I think, when they went overhead with the security, they went crazy. But the same people that have kept extraterrestrial secret, okay, are doing the same thing with a lot of these programs, which really, 8 years later, everybody knows what the whole show is.
Yeah.
And so I'm just saying that you think you're keeping it secret from the Chinese and the Russians, and you're not.
There really are no secrets. Very rarely are there secrets, I guess, anymore. If it's entered digitally into a computer, it's hackable.
Yes, sir. And they're doing it every day.
All right.
It's just interesting that on this other program where you're getting all these different naval personnel trained to operate thousands of P-3 anti-submarine aircraft with a primary mission to look for extraterrestrial and their facilities. And so many of these facilities actually are located in the Great Lakes between the United States and Canada. And there's these fellows fly in and out of that daily. Most of the time, they have their stealth turned on so you don't see them. Just like you don't see most of UFOs.
Right.
Because they got the stealth turned on.
You say these guys fly in and out of there every day. Who are you talking about?
The extraterrestrials.
Yeah, none of our guys. We're not working with them in any way. It's all E.T.
Yes.
Although there probably are some programs where we do, but you're talking about E.T. coming and going all the time. Just they have stealth on. Also, it's well known that an E.T. craft, if it's daylight, broad daylight, if it's just flying at a certain rate of speed, your eye will not acquire it easily. It flies right past. You don't see it. You might feel like a little bug just flew by or something.
You can see it in the change of the clouds. That's another area,
yeah,
too.
Yeah. Now, I've seen video of ET discs, one in particular, and they move so quickly overhead. And remember, they can accelerate from zero to God knows how many thousands of miles an hour in no time, that we have in video 30 frames a second. That's what our normal video records at 30 individual frames per second. Now, this particular disc was moving so fast, it appeared in only 3 of those 30 frames per second. One at the top, one sort of in the middle, and one just nearly off in the bottom corner. So 3 frames out of 30, that's how quickly.
And he just made a 90-degree turn.
Well, I probably did.
He didn't stop. He didn't even slow down for the turn.
They're pretty amazing. All right, Bill, hold on. We have to break for a few minutes. Get yourself a drink of water or whatever. We'll come right back with another hour with the amazing Bill Tompkins. So stay right there.